Welcome to another edition of the Rowan InfoBytes podcast series. We are joined by one of our show regulars, Michael Norris, a senior technical services scientist at the office in Glasgow. Now, you know the drill, Michael. We like to start with a short icebreaker, you know, a funny food story. Hopefully you've got something new for us this time.
Yeah. So last time I said cheese was one of the most difficult, worst things to analyse, but I was thinking about that and actually black pepper trumps it.
Okay.
Black pepper is much worse. It stays with you all day long.
Yep.
It's in your nose all day. It's the worst.
I know that feeling when it's in your nose and you just want to sort of sneeze all day, isn't it? Yeah, not so good to analyse.
No.
So today's episode, we're actually here to talk about mycotoxin analysis in pseudocereals.
Yep.
But first, I think, you know, what is pseudocereals? Because I think many people, you're hearing this term a lot, but maybe not every day understands what it actually is.
Yeah, so it's basically products of non-grass plants, and that'll be high starchy seeds or fruits. But the caveat is that they're used in the same way that traditional or modern cereals are used. So some common examples people know are quinoa and amaranth. Those are the classic ones that people gravitate to these days. But a lot of many ancient grains are pseudo cereals as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
What would you classify as an ancient grain?
Plants unmodified for modern use. Okay. So wheat has been modified for modern use, but things like spelt, as older type of plant. Yeah.
Yeah, and you definitely see a lot of these coming into more recipes nowadays, don't you?
Yeah.
So why are they different to our sort of traditional cereals?
Yeah, one of the main things or main reasons people use them is because they don't contain gluten. So for celiac sufferers, they're a really good substitute to add into their diet. And because they have a higher variety of amino acids in their protein range, they're a good sort of alternative to add into someone's maybe restricted diet, so they're getting a full complement of amino acids.
Okay. Now, obviously, we've been involved in mycotoxin analysis for sort of 35 years plus, so we've got good experience of analysing your typical cereals. Would these sort of extraction methods and protocols work for the pseudo cereals?
Yeah, so a lot of people still gravitate towards the sort of solid liquid extraction with some sort of solvent, followed by a cleanup and HPLC fluorescence or mass spectrometry. The kind of classic methods are still there. But because of the nutritional kind of variety in pseudocereals as a group, you're probably going to need a more specific method for them. And that's certainly what we found with our experience. You need a slightly stronger, a more aggressive method.
Yeah, okay. So how would that method differ for, you know, pseudocereals compared to a traditional cereal method?
Yeah, so we've, with our method, swapped out the sort of typical methanol for acetonitrile, which is a lot stronger and really extracts out the mycotoxins that are in the sample that are incorporated into the more complex sample matrix than you would see with a sort of refined cereal. So we've swapped out that and then added formic acid into the extraction as well.
Okay. And what's the purpose of the formic acid in the extraction?
So it boosts fumonisin quite significantly, fumonisin recovery quite significantly, and ochratoxin by adjusting the pH of the extraction and changing their ionization so they're more soluble in the acetonitrile solvent, so they're more likely to come out into the acetonitrile.
Yeah, and I suppose these are the two toxins that typically suffer in terms of recovery when you're looking at multi-mycotoxin methods.
Yeah.
And what is the buffer that you use in the wash step?
So we add tween into the wash step. Most cereals, but pseudo cereals do tend to have a little bit more of a higher fat content.
Okay.
You may not see it as bad as something like spices in an extraction, but it's there.
Yep.
And it can non-specifically bind to your column. So you want to wash that away, especially because if you're doing mass spectrometry, any amount of sample in your eluate is going to give you matrix effect. So you want to get rid of that as best as possible. Yeah.
And obviously, you know, you done a lot of the validation using one of our new immune affinity columns, the 11 Plus MycoMS Prep. What are the typical recoveries you've sort of obtained with that product when analysing pseudocereals?
Yeah, so we got really good recoveries in the end. We got 88 to 117% recovery, and that is for all analytes, for all four samples that we tested. So that's a big range of analytes. Sample combinations, so really hovering around that 100% mark, which is great. Yep. So that's within the sort of new regulation of 70 to 120% that people are looking for and legislation's looking for.
Yeah. That's one of the changes actually in regulation compared to the old one from document EC401 from 2006, isn't it? It's the range of recoveries that's it's changed. It's much tighter, if you like, that 70 to 120% for all analytes for all concentrations. Really, in general, what should be considered when somebody is developing and validating new methods and new matrices?
So initially, you'd want to look at nutritional composition of the sample that you're working with. If you have a really fatty sample, you'll want tween in there at some point, probably in the sample diluent stage and or the wash step. And that will also tell you how complex the sample is. If you're looking like you could maybe get away with a weaker methanol extraction or water extraction for some analytes, or if you're going to need a stronger extraction like acetonitrile and an acid like we've done here with a really complex sample. For validating a method, you really want to look at choosing a group of representative samples. So not just working with one. For example, with pseudocereals, you don't just want to pick up quinoa and do all of your testing with quinoa and put it out there. You want to try a big set of samples. So we did quinoa, millet, buckwheat, bulgur wheat, a big range of samples to really make sure that this method works for all of them. Replicates as well. You want to do various different amounts of replicates of samples, extractions, and in our case, the immune affinity column itself to make sure that you get precision data on how it's working. Also, your spiking level. You want it to be representative of legislative level. You don't want to go too high where it's not going to be realistic for a real world sample. You want to show that it works at a low concentration as well. So it's important to get data on a sort of range of contamination levels.
And how do you deal with spiking samples when they're naturally contaminated?
So we would always say if you have a sample that's naturally contaminated, spike at least five times higher than what is in it. Sometimes you get a phenomenon where it interferes quite a lot in your recovery data just won't make sense. So if your sample is naturally contaminated, spike at least five times higher for that analyte. It might take you out of the range, but it's hard to find a totally blank sample. Sometimes it's just not possible.
Yeah, especially when you're looking at sort of six, seven different mycotoxins, it's very difficult to get a completely blank sample. Well, thanks for giving us an overview on the new method and the work we've done on the analysis of pseudocereals. And that concludes another episode of our Rowan InfoBite series.
Great, thanks.